certainly hope that it is. It's always a great day when I'm at the worldwide headquarters of Community Radio WSLR.
Oh, gosh, thanks for doing our bio. But I'm going to do yours now, which could take the whole show, so I'm going to cut it real short. Adam, thanks for being here. Adam DeGroote is a graduate of New College right here in Sarasota, Florida. He graduated in 1982, and he's also got his law degree at Florida State University College of Law with high honors in 1984. He has spent 23 years as a public defender. In 1999, he became board certified as a criminal trial attorney. In 2007, he was presented with the Freedom Award for Public Service from the Sarasota branch of the NAACP. And in 2008, he received the Jim Slater Award for professionalism in his practice of criminal law. He was presented by the judges of the 12th Judicial Circuit. He's received all kinds of degrees. It's pretty amazing for his public service in this area. He's also served as the president of the Sarasota County Civil League and as the board of directors of the Sarasota County Bar Association and as chair of the South Coast Partnership and the homelessness. Well, it goes without saying that you have really dedicated a lot of time and time today and have been a good cause. Welcome.
Well, thank you, and I love this area and I love the people of this area. And so it's just been natural to be working throughout the community.
And let me just take a minute also to thank you on behalf of the community for the work that you do with the homeless, with the work that you do with getting felons back their rights, with the work that you're doing on the death penalty, et cetera, and it just goes on and on. We're going to come back to some of those things later on, and we certainly could spend time there. But let's just start with a question. Audrey, do you want me to lean in or do you want to do it?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So you are currently, you put your hat in the ring here with District 71. All right, let's start with District 71. It's a new district, and actually I live in Bradenton, and that now includes me. So tell us a little bit about the redistricting and the district that you're running for office.
District 71 is a coastal district and basically runs from the Skyway Bridge to Siesta Drive in Sarasota. And it's everything west of Tamiami Trail. It includes downtown Sarasota, downtown Bradenton, downtown Palmetto, and all of the islands, Longboat Key, Anna Maria, Bradenton Beach. So I've got great ties to this district. Having graduated from New College, my business is in downtown Bradenton, my home is in North Sarasota. I've taught at the University of South Florida, I've lectured at State College of Florida, and all of these are part of District 71.
All right, so it's a coastal district. Does that play into some of the issues that are unique to this district?
It absolutely does. One of the main issues that everyone on the coast is facing is property insurance. When I go out into the community, I find that about 80% of the property owners are having to get citizens' insurance because no other company will cover them. But the state of Florida is systemically trying to dismantle citizens' insurance without providing any alternatives to our people. And insurance is going to be a key issue in this race.
By 30 seconds, what is citizens' insurance? How is that different than Allstate or some other insurance?
Steve, I was with State Farm for 20 years, paid all my premiums, never made a claim, and around 2004, State Farm dropped me. They didn't just drop me, they dropped everybody else in the area. So did all the other private insurance companies. So Citizens is the insurance company of last resort, and it's basically maintained by the state of Florida. So there's this idea in the legislature now that if we dismantle Citizens or if we allow their rates to go up so high, that it will somehow allow private insurance to come back into the area. I think that's a pipe dream.
The Citizens stuff, we could certainly talk about that. We had an insurance person come in and criticize. Let's get into this just a little bit here. It's actually criticized the Citizens insurance, too, by the insurance people that they were saying it's underfunded.
You know, the latest audit of Citizens shows that they've got more than $6 billion in reserves, which should be sufficient for all but the most catastrophic type of storm. So it doesn't look like Citizens is underfunded to me. I think that that's rhetoric coming from the insurance industry.
Nice, good. Okay. What are the other important issues for this district and also for the legislature that you're going to join?
Well, you know, I mentioned all the institutions of higher education, New College, USF, State College of Florida. Higher education just took a $300 million hit in this last legislative session. outrageous. Education is specifically protected by the Florida Constitution. It's supposed to be the priority of our legislature. Instead, they're giving away taxpayer money to private corporations while cutting our institutes of higher education.
New College part of that?
New College is part of it. New College got some capital improvement money this last session, so we were happy to get that. But on the whole, what's happening is we're asking all state employees, including college faculty, to take pay cuts in order to pay for their pension, which traditionally had been part of their compensation package. And so New College is really hurting right now. And if you follow this last legislative session, you know what happened to the University of South Florida.
We talk about diversifying our economy and the youth that we educate here, and yet we are at the same time cutting education. Do you want to talk about diversifying our economy and what the attainment needs and the often education needs for this area?
We know, interestingly, there's been a lot of focus on what's called STEM education, science, technology, education, and math. But with these cutbacks, the University of Florida has to dismantle its computer science program and will no longer be able to offer degrees. What is going on? There's going to be this new university that's opening in Lakeland. And so we're going to fund $300 million to open this new university while meanwhile taking that out of the budgets of all of the other universities throughout the state. That's just wrong.
Just a quick question. New College is split by 41. Half is in your district, half is in your district. Are they covered? Do you know?
Well, I haven't figured out yet who the students who live on the east side of the campus. I'm not sure what precinct they're registered to vote in and whether that precinct is going to be part of the district or not.
Yeah. Let's see, other issues that you think are important. I guess we can stick to some environmental stuff here, because the coastal is heavily impacted by the environment. Do you see that as being an issue?
Absolutely. So why are we all here in Sarasota? What is the center of Sarasota County and Manatee County? It's Sarasota Bay. And over the last 20 years, we've made some great strides in the protection and preservation of Sarasota Bay. We've been able to remove a lot of the nutrients from the bay. We're trying to reinstall a scallop program in Sarasota Bay. We've done a pretty good job of cleaning it up, but I'm worried about that. One big feeder into Sarasota Bay is, of course, the Manatee River, which is right there. Well, the headwaters of the Manatee River are always under the threat of the phosphate companies. And the phosphate companies run these nice advertisements on TV to try and make us feel good about environmental reclamation. But they are taking our precious natural resources at pennies on the dollar. And the environmental fallout from phosphate mining continues to be a concern. The other big environmental issue is growth management. We used to have serious growth management in Florida. Before you could build a large development, it had to go through the regulatory process. That has pretty well been dismantled over the last 2 years. And it's all going to be done on an ad hoc basis now. I think that's a problem. We must preserve Florida's precious natural environment, or what will we have left here?
And why is this growth in the coast being allowed to continue on the planet? Is that because we have different programs and they got frightened and our tax revenues went down, so it's just determined that we're going to have a food for all now for a while?
That's a very good analysis, and I wouldn't disagree with a lot of it. There's this claim of jobs, jobs, jobs. We have to have jobs. Of course we have to have jobs, but what kind of jobs? And what has happened in legislature and at the local level is that the developers have taken over the asylum,
yeah,
and that they are setting the policy both statewide and locally. And while there are a lot of conscious developers out there who are trying to do a good job, there does need to be an overriding state interest that we always keep at the forefront.
Yeah, and that gives you back to diversification. I mean, we can't just exist on development. We can't just exist on developers and building and that kind of continuous growth.
You're right. Growth has always been at the heart of Florida's economy. We're going to need to look at a different kind of growth right now. Here in Sarasota County, we've got thousands of vacant commercial properties and vacant residences. That's where our growth should be focused now, is on rehabilitating our infrastructure, on putting these commercial properties to a higher and better use, and it's putting people in touch with the property that's out there.
And rehabbing what we've got. I'm looking at all these dead strip malls, and nothing's happening to them. Instead, we're building new strip malls.
And meanwhile, as I came in the studio this morning, there's more than 100 of my homeless friends who are out there on the street who slept there last evening with no place to go. I just read the 10-year plan to end homelessness in Sarasota County, and we're trying to figure out a way to open some shelters throughout Sarasota County. And that's going to have a tremendous overall economic impact as well. When we can get people off the streets, which will help our merchants, and we can help get people services and get them back to work.
Why bring it back to Tallahassee? How would running for our state legislature, how would you deal with the homeless issues?
Well, you know, I want to be an advocate for the people who are underserved right now. And in this last legislative session, the homeless coalitions of Florida were zeroed out. Now, we were hardly taking any money at all from the state as it was. Here in Sarasota County, it was a paltry $25,000 a year. But that's what helped us provide administrative support and to collect the data that we then turn into grant money to help all of our service providers. It is so short-sighted. It is so short-sighted to take away this very small pot of money that we were doing so much good with. So I want to, listen. As one member of the House of Representatives, there's only so much that I could do personally. But who is up there right now who is advocating for the homeless? Who is up there advocating against poverty? Who is up there advocating for health care for our citizens? Those voices have been quiet. My voice will be loud.
All right, so that just reminds me that, you were the public defender for 23 years as well.
23 years at the Public Defender's Office, and then I opened my own office in downtown Brea in 4 years.
And during that time, you were just defending those people that needed defending. So tell us just a few seconds about just what it was like to be a public defender and what you were doing there.
You know, it was a very interesting and very difficult and very rewarding career at the Public Defender's Office. It's the reason I went to law school. I wanted to make sure that everybody was entitled to decent legal representation. And so I tried to practice law with professionalism. I tried to attend to the needs of my clients. And I tried to make a positive impact on our local criminal justice system. And I have no regrets at all about my career at the Public Defender's Office. And it did help me get in touch with the greater needs of this community as well.
You had other offers, and you turned them down to do that. So kudos to you for that.
Yeah, I find that kind of remarkable. Somebody who has spent 23 years in the Public Defender's Office, and has countless service levels, and increased your VOD, and a lot of cash in the private sector. You have lost the lot. When you do win, let's put it that way, what kind of issues are you going to take on in terms of the kind of privatization that's going on in your state, like privatization of prisons?
Well, one of my central issues in this campaign is I'm talking about the core functions of government. And one of the core functions of government is maintenance of our legal system. And that includes law enforcement and corrections. It is a huge mistake to even consider privatization of our prison system. And if you look at some of these contracts that were being pushed in association with privatization, it actually required the state to keep our prisons full. And that's just absurd. I don't think that people realize that corrections is the largest part of our discretionary budget in the state of Florida. So another issue that I'm talking about is criminal justice reform. Just yesterday in the state of Georgia, the governor of Georgia, a very conservative individual, signed comprehensive criminal justice reform, which is going to lead to far less incarceration of nonviolent offenders. more emphasis on restitution and greater emphasis on rehabilitation of offenders. Now, that was a bipartisan effort in Georgia. They were following the lead of Texas, another one of our most conservative states. Yet nobody is talking about criminal justice reform in the state of Florida right now. So that kind of ties into privatization. If we did a better job in our criminal justice system, we wouldn't have the need to incarcerate more than 100,000 people as we sit here this morning.
Why is this movement happening in Texas? Why is there a conservatization of the justice system in these conservative states?
You know, it's not even really liberalization. You have people who are talking about big government and government spending. One of the biggest government areas is in the area of corrections. And every week here in Florida, we see hundreds of nonviolent offenders being sent off to our state prison. It doesn't have to be that way, and that's the lesson that Texas and Georgia have learned.
All right, so our legislature stuff. So one of the things that came out of the legislature this year had to do with insurance, PIP, and PIP is the insurance that we all have if we're in four cars, if we get into an accident, then PIP kicks in and gets us services so that we can get back to work before hurt by an accident. All right, so here's something really controversial that the legislature did that was signed into law by Rick Scott, our governor, who's, by the way, toying with one of the least popular governors in the United States from time to time, years from time. Now, right, so what's going on there? And then we're going to ask you a little bit about that.
Well, I'm running against a man named Jim Boyd, and Mr. Boyd is an insurance agent out of Bradenton. He's Governor Scott's right-hand man on insurance issues. And so this year, they targeted PIP, which is a mandatory part of Florida's insurance coverage. Well, here's the interesting thing. All of us here in the room who own automobiles and have driver's licenses have to carry $10,000 worth of PIP coverage. This new bill that was passed is going to allow the insurance companies, in many cases, to only pay $2,500 to people who are injured. It is nothing but a giveaway to the private insurance companies. Now, they're out there talking about that there was this problem with fraud, the PIP, and there may well have been. And I'm not saying that our present PIP system couldn't have used some reform, but this particular quote-unquote reform was moving in the wrong direction. The other part of this bill is that it's going to require most treatment to be done either at emergency rooms or by private medical practitioners. And it's going to exclude a lot of therapy that was giving people relief from automobile-type injury, relief provided by chiropractors, by massage therapists, and by acupuncturists. That is problematic. We always talk about we don't want to let government interfere with people's health care, and now we're excluding an entire class of health care from insurance coverage.
A little bit of background here. Rick Scott did something almost simultaneously with signing that law, and that had to do with cash and the purchasing of urgent care centers. And we reported on the show the following, correct me if I'm wrong, that Rick Scott took $100,000 in cash from the insurance company representatives and purchased personally 50 urgent care centers. See any conflict of interest here?
It sure sounds like it, Steve. You know, as a matter of fact, there's been so many conflicts of interest that it's hard to keep up with them all. And I'm not even personally aware of the situation that you just mentioned. One of the things that a lot of people have been aware about is that Rick Scott and his trust own all these drug testing companies, and there was this mandatory drug testing of state employees that was recently declared unconstitutional by federal judges. So there has just been this whole litany of conflict of interest going on with our legislature and with our governor.
All right, let's see. We can do some more stuff about the legislature. Let's talk about some specific issues. Is that okay over here? You're looking at me. So let's see, on my list here, health care.
educational vouchers?
Educational vouchers, Delft County, the Eradicate the Prison and Homeless, pick one.
Well, boy, those are all important issues. So let's talk about charter schools and vouchers. Again, the Florida Constitution specifically says that public education is a priority and must be protected for all citizens of the state. For the past decade, there has been this great movement into what are experiments. Experiments with charter schools, and now the latest push is to give vouchers to those who wish to send their children to private schools. I think we need to take a break from this experimentation. I think we need to look at what has worked and what hasn't worked. I think vouchers are problematic. People certainly have the right to choose private schools for their children, but they should not expect that the other taxpayers of the state will have to fund that type of education. And we are funding, hopefully, public education to the extent that it's needed. Charter schools were formed under the premise that they wouldn't be taking any capital improvement money away from a public education system, that it would be a per-student payment to the schools. And now the charter schools are coming forward and saying, well, we want capital improvement money as well in order to build our campuses and improve those. The other issue that surfaced with charter schools is that private corporations are taking over some of these charter schools, and they're trying to move students from the public schools into the charter schools. And then if the school fails, a whole bunch of money has been given away to a private corporation, and there's no accountability for that money. So I think we need to take a deep breath. Every year it seems like there's going to be this great big educational reform. We really need to look at the last decade and see what's worked and what hasn't.
So you would really be for stopping the charter school movement, or at least limiting it so that we didn't have private corporations input into it?
Well, you know, there's some great charter school successes that we can look to in our area.
Uh-huh.
And I'm happy that these charter schools have succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some cautionary tales out there of charter schools that have failed. And a lot of money has disappeared when the schools have failed. So where's the balance? And what do we need to do to help those schools that have succeeded and prevent other schools from failing?
Correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to me there's kind of two types of charter schools. There's charter schools that focus on sort of the generic area. So you could have a charter school that, let's say, focused on arts. Or you could have a charter school that might be religious in nature, that also had a kind of quasi-public tone to it. Is that true?
Well, I'm going to be honest.
I'm a little confused
as well. There was just a charter school symposium in Manatee County that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of all rah, 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 let's get behind the charter schools. And they were pointing at many of the successes up there in Manatee County. And I was impressed with some of these successes. But I'm also concerned because I know the Manatee County School Board has been underfunded year after year.
Right.
And that there's less per pupil going into the public schools. So I asked that question at the forum, and honestly, I didn't get an answer. So if we're funding charter schools at the expense of our publicly operated schools, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems like a great luxury item when we've got our public schools is starving.
Yes.
Yeah, regardless of what kind of school it is that they're getting funded.
Can I switch gears slightly? Are you okay here?
Yeah.
Because we're talking about money, and I want to talk about my favorite subject and what most people consider the most important subject, which is public financing of elections. And we had Professor Jessica on telling us that we shouldn't be hacking at the branches of evil, we should be striking at the roots of evil. And he considers the root of all evil in here, in terms of our political system, money and politics. So let's talk about this. Would you sign a pledge saying that you are for public financing of elections?
Well, I've actually gone further than that, Steve. Yes, I'm for a public financing of elections, but in my own campaign, this is what I'm doing. I'm not accepting political action committee money. I'm not accepting business money. And I'm voluntarily limiting individual contributions to $100 per donor. Now, the people who run political campaigns tell me that I'm not
going to be
They say, oh, you're bringing a knife to a gunfight, you have no chance.
Yes.
I think that they're wrong. I think in the 21st century, with the internet, that there is the ability to get your message out to the people if they are willing to share it. So if my message resonates, it's going to be successful. If my message doesn't resonate, it's not going to be successful. But my opponent, Jim Boyd, has more than $100,000 in the bank, as we sit here this morning. And most of that money is insurance money and phosphate money. So you have to ask yourself, who is Jim Boyd working for? Who is he representing up there? And the reason that I'm limiting my contributions is to make it perfectly clear that my only boss in Tallahassee will be the people of the state of Florida, the individual human beings in the state of Florida, not the corporations.
Are you ran for public defender and narrow boss, very close to us there. Did you learn anything by that campaign?
I sure did. I learned that I love campaigning. I love going out to the neighborhood associations. I love meeting the voters. And I figured out a way to connect with people and to get votes without a lot of money. In that campaign, I was outspent about 2.5 to 1, and yet I lost by less than 0.5%, and the final tally was there.
Yeah, it's razor thin margin.
So the way that I campaign is person to person, and I depend on the people in the community who know about my reputation to help get the word out.
All right, we have just a couple minutes left, and we're talking to Alex Bruce. He is a local attorney, he's a public defender here, and he's running for state representative in District 71, which is coming up. Are there others, any others? This is partisan race, so is there going to be a primary here?
It looks unlikely. Now, qualifying does not close until June 22nd. So we won't know for sure who the candidates are until then. However, the petition process closes on Monday. I'm very confident that I've collected sufficient signatures that I will be on the ballot in November. And I also want to mention my website, www.atfh71.info. That's short for Adam Tabridge, Florida House 71.info. So ATFH71.info. And I'm using my website to discuss policy issues. The first article that I published was Money, Politics, and Influence, where I addressed my pledge to limit myself to individual contributions. The next article that I'm hoping to have out at the beginning part of next week is why I'm running for the Florida House of Representatives and my discussion of the core functions of government.
And let me mention, if you want to hear any part of this broadcast of Adam, that we're going to podcast it. That means we're going to record it. We're going to record it, excuse me, and then post a link. And Adam said that he'd be willing to put that link on your website.
I'm going to be delighted to put that on my website.
And for people that want to hear the entire show, you can go to thesurrealnews.com, or you can also get that site from WSLR.org. You can also hear us live streaming. We're on Podomatic, all over Pacific Broadcasting. Okay, so we're coming to the end of the segment here with Adam. Adam, after this show, after you come on this show, we have Bob Edler from Common Cause. I mean, you're also a member of Common Cause, and we're going to be talking to us about an issue with Alec and a legal issue that they're involved with. They're also involved with redistricting voting rights and other common cause things. All right, on your way out here, I'll give you about a minute here and just sort of sum up why you're running for office and things people really need to know about you.
Well, you know, I'm a lifelong resident of Florida, and in 1981, I got to go work for Governor Bob Graham during the legislative session, and so I've always paid attention to Florida politics since that time. The years have been perhaps the most disastrous legislative sessions in Florida history. I could no longer sit on the sidelines and simply complain about what was happening in Tallahassee, particularly when it's a redistricting year and the voters are going to be configured in a new way. I wanted to give these voters a real alternative to business as usual, and that's why I'm running for the Florida legislature.
All right, thank you. Alex Rouge, running for District 71. Good luck.
An inspiring candidate. Thank you very much.